Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lab podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today we've got a very interesting interview for you, and we talk about Bernie and sadly Manor leaving F1. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Well, hello. Today we have a guest that is really well known around the F1 community for his awesome livery designs. And not only does he make stunning concepts for future liveries, but also brings the past back to life by putting retro liveries onto modern cars. Sean from Sean Bull Design, thank you very much for being with us on this week's episode. And yeah, I only gave a really short introduction of your work. Maybe you could expand a little bit on that and give us some more information about what you're doing.
Okay, well, cheers guys, thanks for that. So basically I'm an automotive designer, and all this is pure like hobby work. It's something that I did as a kid, just with felt tips and stuff like that. I used to draw all the cars. And then I have an obsession with Formula One, like I'm sure most people do that will be listening to this. Yeah. And I got a really great book when I was a kid. It was like the complete book of Formula One. And it's got every image of every single car. So I used to just spend hours drawing each and every one that I could. And now, since my uni education in car design, I learned Photoshop. So I can now try and make them as real as possible. So that's all it is, really. It's just a bit of fun. But maybe one day, as a proper livery designer in F1 team would be nice. But yeah, it's pure enjoyment at the moment. I'm glad that people seem to appreciate it. My Twitter following, Instagram following, seems to have grown quite a bit in the last year or so. And that's only really been since I've been doing it in the last year since I graduated. I've had the spare time to do it.
Yeah, I can actually relate a little bit to that. I mean, all the times in school drawing the F1 cars, but sadly I'm nowhere near your talents. So.
Like I say the same, I'm not much of an artist, but pretty much, would you really put it down to your childhood really drawing all the time in your younger days as why you've really gotten into all these livery designs?
Yeah, completely. It's something I've wanted to do as a kid. My entire graphics project in like year 10, I think, was an F1 team, like make my own F1 team. So I rang up all the teams then because it's the Midlands. And I'm from the Midlands, they're all pretty local, to be honest, so it wasn't too bad. And I've ended up getting a couple of contacts. The guy that did the 2008 Williams helped me out quite a lot, so he was like the first like Kickstarter. It's a guy called Carlo Belli, I think he does his own consultant work now. But he was quite a good contact. And Renault have really been the most helpful in like the past few years. They're probably the most approachable team that I've spoken to, really. So they've been quite good. But yeah, it's a mix of that really, and university education, being surrounded by other car people, because at school I was pretty much the only car person. I wasn't allowed to take A-level art because my teacher was fed up of me just drawing cars all the time. So yeah, it was a mix of that, and then being immersed with other F1 people doing automotive design at Coventry as well really like boosted it. So
okay, yeah, great. I mean, you said in the beginning that basically that F1 stuff is a bit of your hobby. What are you doing as your actual job at the moment?
My actual job, so I work as an automotive designer at a company called CAD CAM Automotive. We're based in Coventry, just near Jaguar, Aston Martin area. And we're a small design consultancy thing, but we got a lot of history. The factory's been here since 1899. It's the original Jaguar factory. And the BRM F1 team, back in its heyday of the 60s, was actually built at our factory. So it's nice to work in a place like this. The Bluebird Land Speed record car was also done here. So it is quite a nice little place. There's only a couple of us here, but it's just a small little company. But I get to do more of the job via such a little small team. So it's nice. It is good.
Yeah, it must be really, really kind of like, eerily strange to have to be in a place with so much history, I guess.
You can see that the factory hasn't changed much since 1899, so most of it's still here, to be honest. But it is good. It is really, really nice. We do a couple of modern projects. We did the Jaguar Project 7 and the Aston Martin DB10 as well was also done at our factory.
Yeah, and speaking of history, maybe, and coming back to Formula One, in a designer's perspective, which livery do you think was actually the best looking in the past 10 years of Formula One?
In the past 10 years?
Maybe 15.
The Honda Earth Car of 2007. I know it's quite a controversial choice, but they did something completely radical and that hasn't been replicated since, probably because of the bad exposure that it got. But I thought that was really groundbreaking. I think in about 30, 20 years even, that'll be looked back on with the fondness of other liveries, classic liveries. In the past, I think it got a little bit misunderstood for the era that it was in, and maybe a bit patronising having an Earth car that's putting out that much emissions. But that's probably the highlight, the standout one from the past 10 to 15 years. Other good ones, Manor one this year has been really, really nice. I really like what they did there. It's quite a retro feel to it, especially the race suits as well, because a lot of it goes back around the rest of their corporate identity and how it fits in with the rest of the team. There's like a whole identity package. And Manor have done that really well last year, so it's just a shame they won't be around this year, perhaps.
Yeah, I think perhaps. We're all sort of rooting for Manor to survive. We were talking about that yesterday on the podcast, so I think we're all just wishing them the best for next year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if they're allowed to run the 2016 car. I've heard rumours about that, being allowed to run it for the first three races, but whether that'll be allowed, especially with the difference in speed with the new cars, not sure that'll be the best thing on track.
Whether they would even make the 107% rule.
So yeah, recently you actually announced your partnership with M-Sport Extra, so maybe could you tell us what that will involve?
Yeah, so it's basically, they approached me. I hadn't really heard of them. I'm only quite new to Twitter myself, so for them to approach me was quite nice, because I've seen the people that are in their group. They've got some very talented people in there. They've got Tim Holmes design as well, who's another livery designer, quite high profile, especially with all his brilliant helmet liveries that he's done in the past like 3 or 4 months. So some other good people in there. I think it's just sort of like an initiative to get more like F1 like-minded people speaking together, discussion issues, etc. A lot of social media layout as well, like a lot of retweeting of each other's stuff, just to get some more exposure for each other and what we all do.
Okay, so basically it's a network of Formula One people, to describe it like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, okay, that's cool. And yeah, definitely it helps each other out. So yeah, I hope you all those guys in the network, best of luck then.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to be taking off quite well.
Yeah, yeah. Coming back maybe to F1 2017 then, we already talked about Manor and the new design, of course, with the 2017 rule. I mean, it's not really directly related to the design of the liveries, but what do you think generally of the regulation change? Do you think it'll have a positive impact on racing?
I'm not so sure about the impact on racing, because adding more downforce means the cars can't really follow each other as well. I would have thought, especially with the turbulent wings that they've got already, and just extending them doesn't really seem the right way to go. They might look a little bit better, but to me it's more about the exciting racing and overtaking. I know DRS is a bit false, but I remember Formula One in like the late 90s to early 2000s, and although they might be classed as great years, there wasn't much overtaking and the races were quite boring. Occasionally there's a few like great moments, but people seem to look back with rose-tinted glasses on what actually wasn't there. Like 2005 and 6 were classed as great years, but if rewatching some of the actual races, they're not amazing. Bar a few like Suzuka, Imola, etc. A lot of them are even more processional than what they are now, so I think people are getting confused with what they wish for without really actually looking at what actually it was. For me, I think a way to solve it would be Formula Ford style, get rid of the wings and just give it pure ground effect. Slipstreaming all the way without DRS, I think that would be a lot better. And then mechanical grip as well of the tyres, much bigger tyres. I know they're having bigger ones this year, but I think much bigger tyres, ground effect, and get some innovation back as well. I mean, it's so closed up now, you don't see anything like the six-wheel Tyrrell or the fan car or anything like that. There's no, the latest innovation has probably been Force India's nose with the holes in it. And if that's all we can really get excited about in this era, it's not the best. I'm hoping there'll be some different looking designs for 2017 is what I'm really hoping. I'm hoping someone comes out with something amazing with this new aero package or a loophole, or even like the Williams Walrus nose, something like that. But I just have a feeling that every car will look very similar.
We hope not.
I hope not as well. I hope there's some real unique looking vehicles.
Yeah, well, we heard about McLaren potentially fielding an orange livery for next season. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I did some recent mock-ups after their Richard Miller event. I had a few minutes, but they seem to have taken off quite well on the internet as well, which is good to see my work getting out there. But I'm not sure if they'll go completely orange, as much as we'd all like to. I hope they do, but I think it'll be very low-key. Because it keeps in the rest of their... I know Zak Brown's there now, but they've still got the same sponsor sheet to keep hold of. So I'm getting my hopes up. I really want them to do something outlandish and orange and fun and modern and what it should be, but I'm not... it seems a bit too corporate still, McLaren, especially with the team wear being revealed lately as being grey with some more grey on it. So... maybe, I hope so. I think there'll be flashes of orange, perhaps. But no, I think they'll... if they can get a title sponsor, that'll change it a lot. Because they are a brand that doesn't have, apart from the orange being a historic colour, they don't really have an identity colour. They have Marlboro for years, and then West, so and then Vodafone. So they do sell themselves out for what the highest bidder is. So even if it is BP Castrol, it could be green and yellow. It could be anything, green and red, Castrol colours. So I think whoever they can land as a title sponsor, I know Zak Brown's talked that up a lot recently of them getting a big title sponsor, at least a title sponsor. I think that will eventually dictate what colour they are.
Maybe they need some Dutch sponsorship to get the orange colour in.
Yeah. Bring ING back from the dead.
Yeah, well, I think they're chasing a sponsor in 2018. But yeah, coming back to the regulation change, do you think it'll do anything at the top of the field? Do you think Mercedes will be challenged? Do you think they'll fall away completely, or do you think they'll just completely dominate again?
It's still perhaps going to be an engine formula, which is what I'm quite worried about, but because it's been this engine for so long, all the others are closing the gaps, which is good. It's almost like 2008 when it was peaking then on the engines and the aero, and everyone was getting closer and closer. I remember 2008 where I think it was Brazil where the whole field was less than a second. In Force India had only just turned up. So I'm hoping that the engine will be parity and it might turn back into an aero formula. Everyone's expecting Red Bull to do bits this year, but we'll see. 'Cause I know Adrian Newey is not as involved as he was before, and whether that team is still as good with him. But everyone's expecting them, especially with Verstappen and Ricciardo, who can outdrive their cars usually. I think they'll be the one everyone's expecting to challenge quite well. Ferrari seems to be getting more Italian each year and going back to their 90s days, but I'm not sure. I think Mercedes will be up there. It'll be interesting to see how Bottas gets on with Hamilton. But I think it'll be Mercedes and Red Bull next year. I'm not sure if anyone's going to make a big leap up. Maybe Force India, if they've still got the investment to jump up, and everyone's McLaren. If Honda can get a parity engine, then maybe they might make some gains.
Yeah, we heard the comments of Honda, fourth place would be a disappointment or something. So, I mean, yeah. they've got the ambitions, but now they're...
I remember the first year they came in, they wanted podiums. So.
So yeah,
it's a shame because Alonso's my favourite driver. He has been since 2000s. So it's a shame to see him back down there when you know that he can do so much better and he's worth so much better than what he's got. But we'll see. It might pay off. Schumacher had a tough time. This is a few years at Ferrari. Look how that ended up.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we all hope for a two-way, three-way fight at the front. I mean, those last 3 years with Mercedes at the front, it maybe wasn't the best, or it didn't give the sport the best publicity possible.
No. As a British fan, I'm not actually a Hamilton fan, which I get quite a bit of stick from all my mates as well. So I was quite happy to see Rosberg win this year. But it's been all right. It wasn't like the Red Bull era where it was Vettel winning like 9 in a row, etc. At least it was a little bit up, tighter between the two. But I'm hoping something like 2010-esque with 5 drivers going into the last few races would be brilliant. Or 2012, where I think it was 8 different winners in the first 8 races. Something like that would be amazing. But we'll see. We'll see what it brings.
Yeah, 2012 was really amazing. And an inter-team battle like Hamilton, Bottas would be even better, of course. I mean,
I think he's going to do better than people give him credit for, Bottas.
Yeah, definitely.
I think he's very, very good driver, very capable. 2014, I know it was a while ago, but he put in some stellar performances in there. I think it'll be a lot closer than people will give credit to him for.
Yeah, I think he has potential to do very well there, and it is good to see him get a shot at a top seat, because you know there's so many drivers recently that have been rumored to get to the top but then missed out, such as you know Nico Hülkenberg. So yeah, it's a great opportunity for Bottas.
Yeah, I think Hülkenberg's move to Renault could be an inspired one. I think give them a couple of years with the investment that they're planning. And their engine gains that they're making each year. I think Renault could be 2018, 2019, I think they could be well up there. They don't come back in it just to finish third, fourth, whatever. They're going to kind of come back to win again.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to end. Actually, we really hope that a lot of teams do better in the coming seasons.
Yeah.
And we'll get closer racing. So, yeah. Again, thank you very much for being with us this week.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed it, guys. Thank you very much as well.
And for all listeners that are actually interested in your work, where can they find you online?
You can type in Sean Bull into Google. It's usually the most the top. There's not pretty unique name. But yeah, either that or my Behance. If you type in Sean Bull design on Twitter or Instagram or Sean Bull liveries, something will pop up. Look for the one with lots of cars.
All right, thank you very much.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Thanks.
So in the second part of the podcast, we want to talk about the other important news of the week. And yeah, the huge news this week was that Bernie Ecclestone will step down as the CEO of Formula One. And yeah, Liberty Media has its own plans with Formula One, I guess. And it was actually quite surprising, at least for me, because, I mean, we always heard that Bernie Ecclestone will stay on for another 3 years or something. But it seems like he'll stay in a different role at the moment, it seems like he will not stay at all, right?
Well, pretty much his role now is it's like a chairman emeritus, I think it is called, which basically means he is still, well, it's really weird. He sort of has the title that he had before, but he has no official role, but his input is still valuable or something. I'm not too sure, but
you think?
At the end of it, that's what... Liberty Media have said, but he has much less power than he like if any at all than he had before. So it's a big change for Formula One now. To me it wasn't much of a surprise as such. I mean, over the winter he always said that he was going to be an intricate part of Liberty Media and all this, and then the weekend before it was announced, there was rumors. I seen a lot of rumors starting to gather that he was going to be ousted. And then, yeah, when it came to be, I wasn't I wasn't completely surprised, I guess, but yeah, it's a massive change for Formula One because I mean he was CEO of Formula One for what, 40 years, I think
Yeah,
it
a long
was.
time, a long time.
Yeah, so I mean a lot of people are happy at the move. There's probably some people that are maybe disappointed at the move, but personally I think it's a good a decision. I mean Bernie's done all he can do for the sport, and he's done well to get it to where it is, but I think right now it is time for a change.
Yeah, right after the announcement, I put out a quick survey on our Twitter account. You can follow us there at FLF1 podcast. And yeah, the majority of people there also said that they are happy that Bernie is gone and we have some fresh input into Formula One. And yeah, it's going to be very interesting how that's going to work with of course, now Ross Brawn being in a what is actually his role? Do you know that? I mean, obviously he's more a consultant on the sporting side of the company, but what exactly will his tasks be?
Yeah, well, he his official title is managing director, of Liberty Media or of Formula One. So, yeah, pretty much he's going to be focusing on the sporting aspect of it. All the ins and outs of things that happen on the racetrack. He's going to have a very vital input, let's say, to what is going to happen in the next few years of Formula One. Decisions such as budget caps, what races we go to, different things like
DRS,
this.
what was big in the news, yeah.
All these sort of things. Ross Brawn will have a big say in, which is good because I mean Ross Brawn is probably one of my favorite people in Formula One. I mean what he's done on a team's point of view is outstanding. The success that he's enjoyed. He was there at Ferrari. He built Ferrari with Schumacher. He won his own championship with his own team with Brawn. He was a vital part of Mercedes getting to where they are today. Even though he left the team at the end of 2013, so yeah, Ross Brawn. He knows the sport more than anyone else. Very smart guy, and he said before that he didn't want to return to a team to work. To work within a team because he feels he's done all he can, which is fair enough. So I think to have him in this aspect of the sport is very, very good because not only does he know the stuff to do with the cars and stuff, but he knows a lot in general aspects of the sport, and he would be a great asset.
Yeah, I agree totally, 100% on that. And it's really going to be interesting when they implement the first changes. I mean, in the last few days, I personally observed that they uploaded a lot more, more recent content on the YouTube channel. Maybe that was already some kind of input from Liberty Media. Maybe it was already planned when Ecclestone was still in charge. I don't know. But I think fans will now really look out for the small bits, but also the big bits. What will change in Formula One? What impact will Liberty Media have on Formula One? And I think it's also going to be a very it's going to be interesting to watch how the stock market will interpret the actions of Liberty Media, because of course now Formula One is basically a publicly traded company, and all actions of the sport and the company's health will be mirrored on the stock market price. So that's going to be very interesting, I guess.
Yeah, something you said there actually about fans looking towards the big changes and the small changes. I think small, yeah, of course, big changes are going to be very important because that's what's going to give it the fans real appeal and real interest. But I think the small changes and the small little issues are very important. Something like their YouTube channel, where, like you said, they uploaded a few videos over the past week. There was one of Verstappen winning his first race, the Rosberg Hamilton crash, Alonso Gutierrez crash. I think stuff like that, just giving fans more access to these little things, just overall makes the sport more appealing. Is something I would love to see. I'm not sure if it would ever go ahead, but on the YouTube channel to upload races from years gone by, you know, real memorable races from the 2000s or the 90s or 80s, or you know, as far back as you want to go, stuff like that would be so really, really cool to see. And it's been called on for a long time now, and Chase Carey has already said that that's one aspect of Formula One that they need to improve on, is their digital side, because Formula One has really lagged behind on that in the past few years. So I think small changes will be very important to the future, maybe not as important as the big changes. You know, at the end of the day, what you do want to see is great racing, great exciting racing out on track. That's at the end of the day, that's what it all comes down to. But if you can gather a lot more around that and make it a much fuller sport, then it will gain so much more appeal.
Yeah, and if there is no great wheel-to-wheel racing on track, you can still go to YouTube, type in, I don't know, F1 2004 race, and then maybe there's a good result with V10 engines and so on. You know, maybe that's really something Formula One can improve on. And also in terms of the live coverage, I mean, a lot of sport organizations already broadcast their events live on the internet. I mean, some do it for free, I guess, but some are paid services, and I think that would also be a good way for Formula One to get more viewers for the sport. But yeah, it will definitely be a difficult task with all the TV contracts in place at the moment. So all in all, I think we all need to wait and see what actually happens in Formula One with the new owners. But one thing that needs to change for sure is the distribution of money, because sadly, very sadly, in the last week, we got the confirmation that Manor is not only in administration, it was in administration, but that actually there was no buyer found for the team. The staff were told that they should go home, and basically the team is dead.
Yeah, I mean, it's really horrible to see, because it's made so much more bitter. I mean, since 2010 we had three teams join. We had HRT, Caterham, and Manor, although they were called Virgin Racing at the time. But these three teams, they were instantly backmarkers. You know, they were struggling all the time, and when HRT left, you know, it's always sad when you lose a team from the grid, but HRT left, there wasn't really much kind of, no one really lost any sleep over it. The same thing happened with Caterham. I mean, I was quite sad to see Caterham go. But then I think Manor, maybe it was the fact that they were in the sport for like two extra seasons.
Because they're the last team, or they were the last team.
Yeah, possibly that. And you know, maybe it was the fact that they've scored points, and well, maybe for me anyway, I think I gave myself a false hope. I gave myself false hope, believing that they would, you know, get out of this mess and they would be on the grid for 2017. I mean, if you look back at the short history, you know, they've pretty much struggled right from the get go. But there's only really one race for Manor that sticks out in your head, which is Monaco 2014. With at the hands of Jules Bianchi getting their first ever points finish in Formula One. It's a very, very sad story for Formula One, a story that I really, really didn't hope to read about. I think despite the fact that they were backmarkers, I really do think we'll miss them from the grid next year.
Yeah, I think so too. It'll be a bit of a change to only have 20 cars and 10 teams, you know. I think I said it already in the episode where we discussed the financial troubles of Manor, that although they are most of the time last and second to last, they add something to the sport, whether it is impeding the front runners or something, but it's always something they add. And for the viewers on track, you know, the track side in the grandstands, it's two cars less that are going around. So yeah, it's a loss for Formula One. And yeah, due to that, we actually got one positive thing out of it, I would say, because the Manor employees that left the team, they posted a picture on Twitter that showed them with their wind tunnel car for 2017. So it basically was the first picture of a 2017 car. What did you make of that?
It wasn't really an overly clear picture. The wind tunnel designs are basically 60% smaller,
right,
than real scaled cars. So we didn't get the full plan or the full design of a 2017 car, but it does. I'm actually just looking at it now, and you can really see the front wing is sort of just, it's a lot more bent, I want to say. And you can really see how the car and the rear wing is just lower. The nose hasn't really changed that much, but of course, that was the first image we've seen of a 2017 car. But I think I'm not really sure how much to take from that, and I'm still gonna wait with sort of expectations towards the proper releases before preseason.
Yeah, definitely. So out of that news, basically, on one hand, it's very, very sad, and we'll all miss Manor, and it's also a bad situation for all the employees or ex-employees. But yeah, if we needed to take one positive thing out of it, it's really what they gave us throughout the years. Really some good moments there. And yeah, that last picture of a 2017 car. So I think, but all in all, we will miss them, definitely.
Comment of the week. Get featured on the show by telling us your opinion.
So, comment of the week, of course, you can write to us. I think the quickest way, definitely, is to reach out to us on Twitter, at FLF1Podcast. And Mason Hawker asked us the question, what do you make of the criticism aimed at Magnussen by his old Renault boss? Is it unfair? Fergal, what do you think?
To be honest, I don't really know all the information. The comments made were very vicious. They basically said that, you know, he lacks, the team would tell him to do one thing and he'd do another, and he'd be very hard to work with and everything. And, maybe it's true, maybe it's not, I'm not sure. But I think publicly to come out at a driver like that is quite wrong, quite unprofessional.
Exactly.
And I do... I do disagree. Yeah, maybe he was hard to work with, but if he was hard to work with, then that's Renault's gain and it's Haas's loss. So at the end of the day, he shouldn't really be complaining if that's the case. Maybe he's just very bitter over the fact that they lost a great driver. Maybe if Haas can back up their comments at the end of next season, we'll wait and see. But yeah, it was very unprofessional of them, I think.
Yeah, that's what I think too. I mean, is it unfair? I think it is unfair because, as you said, it is a matter that should be discussed internally. Of course, now he isn't part of the team anymore. But anyway, I mean, Magnussen did not really say too many bad things about Renault. I mean, he said the obvious things. The car wasn't that great this season. and also the way Renault negotiated the contract with him wasn't the best way, but it wasn't really too negative. But what Renault said there, I think it was very unprofessional and very unnecessary as well. I mean, what could they achieve by that comment? Nothing. It does not benefit them. It does not benefit Haas. It's just unnecessary. I mean, I don't know what or why Cyril Abitbol, I think it was him, said that comment. Right.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I think it was.
So, yeah, Mason, thank you very much for the question. I mean, keep them coming. We would love to hear your opinion, and we are loving to discuss it on the show. Also, you can write us via email. We've got a really dedicated email for the Fast Lap podcast. It's fastestlappodcast@gmail.com. So a lot of ways to reach out to us, also on YouTube, if you'd like to. We are very happy to hear from you. So if you'd like the interview, you can write it in the comments as well. And if you want to check out Sean again, as he said, type it into Google, or you can follow him on Twitter as well. He's quite active there. So have fun with that. And thank you very much for listening this week. Wherever you are listening, we would really appreciate your feedback by commenting or rating the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.